We're going to come back and take phone calls and continue chatting with Sydney Ross Singer about so many different things. Next up, the thyroid. We'll find out what's going on there, and then we'll take your calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. Sydney Ross Singer with us. We'll get to your calls as well. Cindy, let's talk about the thyroid again and what's happening there. It's a very important piece of the body.
It certainly is. And what we think we've discovered is that when you use your voice, you actually stimulate your thyroid because of the vibration of the of your vocal, you know, your voice box. When it vibrates the thyroid, which is basically attached to it, and that makes you secrete thyroxine, which is thyroid hormone. And that means what we've found is that if people yell or overuse their voices, they over-vibrate the thyroid and can release too much hormone and become hyperthyroid. And so, you know, if you're stressed out and you're yelling a lot, and you end up getting hyperthyroidism, if you quiet down for a while and let your thyroid heal, you could probably get better. I mean, you might be able to get better. If you go to the doctor right away, they'll give you radioactive iodine and just knock your thyroid out and then put you on thyroxine. But this could be a natural, safe way to take care of hyperthyroidism, especially if you've gone through episodes of yelling. And conversely, if you don't use your voice enough, which happens more and more these days, especially we were talking about cell phones and people are texting now and they're not talking like they used to, that lack of using of the voice understimulates the thyroid and you get low thyroid. And to compensate for that, you should sing, vocalize, just use your voice more. I've run into a lot of people who've had those experiences. Like one really interesting one was there was a nun who told me she went into seclusion for a couple of years and couldn't talk. And when she got out, by the time she got out, she was hypothyroid. And that's a common thing if you just don't use your voice. A lot of women in middle life, they start getting hypothyroidism. And oftentimes these women have gone through traumatic, like, you know, they've been divorced or some life changes, which they don't talk as much, they don't use their voices as much, and they get more and more depressed as a result because their thyroid starts going down. So it's important to keep using your voice at the levels you're used to using it. And if you either over or underuse it, you could change your thyroid levels. So there's actually studies now coming out showing that. They've actually taken thyroid cells and grown them in culture and exposed them to sound, and it makes them secrete thyroid hormone. It's because it's stored in the thyroid in a gel-type form, and it's known that mechanical stimulation of your thyroid releases thyroid hormone. If you just actually rub your throat, you can make thyroid hormone come out. And if you're in a noisy environment with lots of vibration in occupational settings, that's known to cause thyroid damage. So the thyroid is very sensitive to vibration, which suggests that the reason it's on your voice box is because it actually is, the vibration is part of its mechanism of action.
It needs a vibration, doesn't it?
Yes. To keep stimulated the right amount.
Now, but not too much.
Right. And it works with the brain. I mean, your brain controls thyroid levels as well. But this is, we believe, is another mechanism for affecting your thyroid level. And your brain probably gets, I mean, a lot more research is needed in this, obviously. But they actually thought about this in Ayurvedic medicine thousands of years ago. They knew to stimulate the thyroid, you should vocalize and sing and chant. So they actually knew vocal stimulation was good for the thyroid. So it's not like, you know, there's nothing new under the sun, I guess.
That's pretty dramatic. Let's take some calls here, as promised. We'll pick it up by going to Joe, truck driving in Montana. Welcome to the program, Joseph. Go ahead.
Hey, George. I love these programs that you talk about alternative health and stuff.
Thank you, Joe.
I had a question. I'm talking on a, since I'm driving truck, I'm talking on a hands-free Bluetooth headset, and you were talking about the cell phones earlier causing cancer with the radiation, and I was wondering if Bluetooth does the same kind of thing. And then also a related question is, I also have one of them pocket CC radios, which I like, and does that, when you're carrying it around your pocket, does it exude radiation too that's cancer causing? So the Bluetooth and the radio, that's my question.
The radio, I don't think so, but the Bluetooth, I'm not sure of. What do you think, Doc?
Well, I think if you, I think you need to experiment with these types of things. If you feel headaches, you know, some any physical effects from using it, and you have any problems you don't know the cause of, you have to experiment with these types of things and just stop using it for a while and see if you feel some improvement in the way you feel, any changes. I mean, that's the way you have to experiment with these things on yourself. These are lifestyle, we call them self-studies, where you just try it on yourself, change something you're doing, and see how it makes you feel. So that's all I could recommend about that.
Of course, you know, the Bluetooth is in the ear almost 24/7 for most people.
Yeah, I would find that so uncomfortable. I mean, I couldn't do that myself. I don't think you should be, the Bluetooth in the ear, I mean, it sounds like that could be irritating, and it's very close to your brain, and it doesn't sound like a good thing. But I can't say, you know, I don't have any evidence right now to say one way or the other. It's just intuitively, logic, common sense says to me, you know, I would avoid that personally.
What if you live near cell towers? What about that?
I'd move.
You would? Really?
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't want to live really close to a cell tower or really close to electrical transformers. And
what about these smart meters that are attached to homes now?
Well, there's the EMFs that we're surrounded with. Some people seem to be extremely sensitive to. But it's going to take a lot of, if you're going to wait for the research to come out, you're going to wait a long time. I think what people need to do is experiment and change their environments and see how it makes them feel. That's sometimes the best way to know what's happening to you, because everybody's also unique anyway. I mean, a study may show no big deal for a certain thing in most people, but you might be particularly sensitive. So you have to just try it on yourself and eliminate things that could potentially be a problem and see if it makes you feel any differently.
Cheryl is in Washington, west of the Rockies. Cheryl, good morning.
Good morning, Sir George.
Good to have you with us.
God bless your soul. Hey, brother, everything you're talking about is making me so intelligent. And, doctor, you're right about the thyroid. I'm 62, and I've got the body of a 18-year-old, but I worked for it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And grandma always said, don't wear bra, you know, so how miracles happen. But, yeah.
Grandma knows best.
Sir, and I also worked with a power company for 15 years. But the Sasquatch sighting at Wallace Falls, and we need the crew out here, my brother, and we'll get up there and find you. I got a lead dog I'm training, Kane Corsa, to hunt. So we only go with bow and arrow, George, so you're going to have to rough it a little.
All righty. Well, there's somebody who takes your recommendation.
Yeah, I hope she gets the dress to kill, because the new studies and our experiences over the last 25 years are in the new book, Dress to Kill. So I hope people pick that up and see all the studies that are supporting this, because we could save so many women from cancer and pain and cysts by just knowing you shouldn't wear tight bras and don't wear them to sleep. Make sure they don't leave red marks or indentations. And, you know, bra-free is also very acceptable these days, and it's very liberating, and a lot of women feel their lives are transformed once they stop constricting themselves.
A lot of people have migraines these days.
So oh, yeah.
What's happening there?
Well, we did an interesting migraine relief project. That's a whole other story. George, you're making me give you everything tonight.
I want it all.
Well, this one is actually a phenomenal story. It's all about head elevation when you sleep. And they know this now from space medicine. When you're lying flat, the blood pumps into your head, and you don't have gravity to help drain it out of your head. And in space where there's no gravity, what happens is fluid shifts to the head because there's nothing to help it drain out. And when you're standing up, your head is above your heart, and your heart has to pump blood up to your brain against gravity, and then it goes through your brain and so forth. And then when it comes down, it's assisted by gravity. So gravity is an important, it plays an important part of circulation for the brain. When you're lying down, that gravity effect is lost, because now the head and the heart are on the same level. So as your heart pumps into your head, it doesn't have gravity to resist that pressure, and it doesn't have gravity assisting the drainage. So you end up getting high pressure in your head. And that's why your blood pressure drops at night, so you don't give yourself a stroke and blow a blood vessel from too much pressure. Well, what happens is we found that people when they sleep too flat, and they're a lot of people, belly sleepers are the worst. They cut off this. They end up congesting their brains, and in the morning, your brain pressure. They've studied this. Your brain pressure is highest in the morning when you get up. Your eye pressure is highest in the morning. And basically, your whole head is congested with fluid. So your sinuses are congested, your eyes are baggy, your whole brain is congested, your whole head. And if you raise the head of your bed, space medicine people have found that a 30-degree head of bed elevation is optimal for both brain and heart circulation. And that's why there are adjustable beds. I've tried this for years. We wrote a book about this, which is still available, called Get It Up, about raising your bed, raising the top of your bed and raising your head. And what we found is it got rid of migraines. And we think migraines are a brain flush to get fresh fluid into the head. And that's why you have it at night and usually in the morning after sleeping and getting congested all night. The only way your brain's going to get the oxygen and sugar that it needs is by getting fresh blood. So it opens up the blood vessels in your neck and in the brain, and you get this pressurized fluid coming in to try to save the brain from being so congested and stagnant. So that's what a migraine is, like a defense mechanism. And we had people raise their beds, and they stopped having migraines, and like right away. It was amazing. I so encourage people to try this. You don't have to buy an adjustable bed, although I recommend that. You can use wedges, and they even use them for hiatal hernias and after some brain surgery or head surgery or to breathe easier. You can buy these foam wedges for the top half of your bed. But, you know, you can also put blocks under the head of the bed to make an inclined plane. The bottom line is, and you don't want to just prop your head up with a lot of pillows, because if you do that and your neck gets touching your chest area, like if you bend your head forward, you actually shut off the drainage from your head and you increase brain pressure. And when you turn your head to the side, you increase brain pressure. So actually the best way to sleep is on your back, with your head of bed elevated so that your head is getting circulation, and your feet could be elevated too, so your feet drain from being congested all day. They get puffy at the end of the day because of gravity pulling fluid down. So you want your feet up and your head up at night, sort of like a position to be in a lazy boy recliner type of thing, where you, and people love that kind of you know, recliner position where your head and feet are up. It's very comfortable. That's ideal for circulation.
People are getting Botox now for migraines. What do you think of that?
Well, people will do all sorts of weird things.
They say it works.
Well, I'm sure Botox, people who sell it are going to say it works. I don't know if I'd want botulism toxin in my body for any of these things, especially, you see, that's, again, treating it without looking at the cause of these things. Why are we getting migraines? Now, medicine typically says they don't know the cause of migraines, and our discovery is another interesting breakthrough in this idea. I mean, migraines are adaptive. They even found that people who have migraines actually have fewer other problems. It's a defense mechanism that helps your brain. And by the way, it's not just migraines. This causes, there are so many brain conditions related to too much congestion in the brain, and they know it's too much brain pressure. Sleep apnea, they already treat by raising the head of the bed. You can treat it that way and get rid of it. Glaucoma, eye pressure. You raise the head of the bed and your eye pressure doesn't get as high.
Yeah.
Because it's the highest in the morning. And they already know this. They already sometimes use this. But
well, that's a good point.
These are not pharmaceutical solutions. They're lifestyle solutions. So they're not promoted the same way. But they work. And I think Alzheimer's is an end disease for this, because you look at an Alzheimer's brain, they have huge ventricles in their brain with a lot of pressure and a lot of fluid. And they don't know why they have this pressure, but they never consider their sleep position. And astronauts, by the way, they get headaches, they get migraines, they get glaucoma, they get inner ear infections. And that's another thing, if you're sleeping on your ear, leaning on it. Children, when they're leaning on ears, when they're side sleeping, those are the ears that have problems. And you actually change the whole shape of your skull by sleeping, by the way you sleep, because you're spending a third of your life leaning on your body in bed. And if you're like a right side sleeper, you'll discover if you look in the mirror, your nose is going to start bending over to the other side of your face. You actually get facial asymmetries as a result of the way you compress your face into the pillow. So these are things people don't think about. But, you know, people used to sleep in hammocks. Orangutans sleep in hammocks. That's a much more natural way. Your head is up, your feet are up, you're on your back, so your ears are open, your eyes can easily open, you see what's going on around you. It's only in modern life where we could be locked up in a bedroom and keep ourselves oblivious to the world and just sleep on our bellies with the, you know, head to the side, and you wake up worse than you felt before you went to sleep, groggy in the morning, unable. As soon as you raise your bed, you wake up fresh mind, you're alert, your sinuses aren't congested, and you even end up needing to sleep less. It's like a miracle thing, and it's so easy to try for yourself, and it's free. Just get some blocks and put it under your bed and make an incline plane with the head high, about 6 inches elevation, and you'll feel the difference the next morning.
Okay, back to the calls we go. Let's quickly get J.D. in Indianapolis in. J.D., go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Norrie and Mr. Danheiser. And to your guest, Dr. Singer, supposedly our bodies have a endocannabinoid system, and I'm wondering, what does that got to do with our modern culture?
Oh, boy. That's just, I don't know how to answer that question. I mean, the endocannabinoids you're talking about, like, are in the brain and all over the body, actually. And I guess people who take cannabinoids from, like, marijuana consumption, they are obviously, it's like taking hormones. You have your own internal hormones, you take external hormones, and it stimulates the things those hormones stimulate. Well, the same thing with these cannabinoids. But I don't know how else to answer your question.
As we almost wrap up this portion of the show, Sydney, and we'll come back in a moment, could you give out your websites again?
Yes, brasandbreastcancer.org. And that'll tell you what you need to know. And please spread the word, because we could spare millions of women pain and suffering, and the men who suffer with them, by just letting women know about the problems caused by wearing tight bras for long hours every day.
You would think that doctors would tell them that, too.
Some of them are.
Starting?
More and more of them are. The issue, though, you know, has...
Are the clothes companies starting to make changes, too?
Which companies?
The clothing companies.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you go
They're
to,
smart,
if you go to
then.
Stores now for looking for bras, there's so many bralettes now are hot. I mean, bralette sales are...
I would not know there, Sydney.
Well, you know, you might have a daughter or granddaughter or something. But actually, if you're ever walking through, you know, these department stores and look for a moment at the bra departments, and I've seen the statistics... non-constrictive bras are now much more popular, and push-up bras and those types of bras that are constrictive.
So they're safer, you're saying.
Down. These are safer bras, yeah. The thing is, though, even a safer bra that's non-constrictive, no underwire, all that, if you're wearing the wrong size, it's still not good. And in fact, 85% of women wear the wrong size.
Okay, we're going to come back and wrap things up with final calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Sydney Ross Singer with us. Sydney, of all the things that you have worked on, of course, the Dress to Kill is one of the big stories that you've been uncovering. What are you working on in the future?
Well, I don't know. We'll see what things come up. I think right now that Dress to Kill is my focus, because we just came out with the second edition, updated for 2018, with all these new studies, and you know
they're backing up what you said years ago.
Yes, and it's really it feels really good to see that people are coming around and thinking about being bra free. Used to be so taboo. Women are now questioning. I mean, why they're even having to wear bras. In fact, there's an interesting, you know, the whole my wife just wrote an interesting article about her Me Too moment with her bra. I mean, bras are, when you think about the fact that so many women have really bad relationships with their bras, they are uncomfortable, they know it. It's the first thing they rip off their bodies when they get home from work to just stop being constricted. And they're forced to wear this in public. You know, they have to wear bras. And when you're wearing something that is harming you and you know it and you're not comfortable in it, but you feel compelled to, or you're going to be ridiculed or chastised or be fired. I mean, women are afraid, even though that probably would never happen, but they're afraid of that. It's really like a form of abuse against women. It's like this is a male-dominated culture where women are compelled to wear bras and cover their, you know, treat their breasts a certain way. And usually it's for men and the pleasure of men, shape it in a way that's culturally culturally decided is desirable. And if it's harming women, they really have a right, they should have a right to be free of that. And I think more and more women are questioning that. They're wondering, why isn't a man can go to work comfortable, but we can't. We have to wear a bra no matter what. And, that's why this issue is taking as long as it has. You know, there's a lot of medical issues that take years, especially when they challenge a fundamental thing in the culture. I mean, challenging the bra, which is so iconic, is like, it's part of the fabric of our society. And it's like challenging cigarette smoking. That took 30 years. The first studies that found cigarettes were causing lung cancer were pretty much ignored. Doctors were still going on, you know, you probably remember this, you know, in the 50s where doctors were selling Camel cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that was after there were already studies showing they were causing lung cancer. So there's like an inertia. The culture gets invested in what it's doing. And look at mercury. Mercury is used. We know how toxic mercury is.
Oh, and dentists are telling you to get it out of your fillings now.
Some tell you. Some still use it. And the American
Dental
Association still says it's not, you know, they don't want to admit that that was a problem. And it's still in vaccines. They'll use thimerosal, which is mercury. These are things from like 100 years ago. They used mercury for preservative purposes, and they're still using it. And the evidence mounts about the problems with that, and we still can't deal with that. I mean, there's example after example of resistance. The medical community is very conservative, very slow to change, and when there are industries and financial interests involved, it becomes very, very difficult. Usually those financial interests start to fund their own research to prove their products are good, and then it confuses the whole thing, and then there's studies on both sides, and the public doesn't know what to believe, and then it can go on for decades like that. I mean, radiation, look at breast cancer mammograms. The whole mammogram radiation guidelines, you know, how much radiation is safe. Every few years, they'll say, oh, well, it's safe now, but we've lowered it from before. And then a few years later, they'll say, well, it's safe now, we lowered it from 3 years ago. And then when do you start, at 40 or 45 or 50? You know, all of these guidelines take a long time to get agreement on in the medical community. I was told by the American Cancer Society, which has a problem with the bra and breast cancer issue. I mean, they have been dismissing it, unfortunately, and I've talked with them to try to get them to reexamine this, but I don't know what their problem is right now, but I'm hoping that they're slowly coming around. I mean, that's another thing when an organization has made a statement like they did with the bra and breast cancer issue 25 years ago, that this can't be, it becomes an uphill battle.
All right, let's take some final calls here for you. East of the Rockies, Lynn in Maine. Go ahead, Lynn.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Listen, I was just recently diagnosed with breast cancer.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Okay. And some of the stuff that Dr. Singh has been talking about, I have wondered about a question. What about sports bras?
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about that?
Sports bras can be very tight, and so they're not necessarily like a great alternative. But they, you know, you just have to make sure you're not wearing the wrong size. And you would only, you know, they're good to keep your breasts under control when you're doing high impact sports, but you probably want to take it off after that. You don't want to immobilize your breasts because when they move, they pump fluid, like lymphatic fluid. So you want to be careful with sports bras as well. They're very compressive and can constrict your breasts as well. So just try to always, if you're going to wear a bra, make sure it doesn't leave red marks or indentations. It's not changing the shape of your breasts. It's not smashing them. It's, you know, and it's not really to sports bras, but it just made me remember something that there was a doctor that I included this in my book. He is an older doctor who actually looked at 350,000 mammograms. He is a radiologist and a mastologist, so he's an expert on breasts. 350,000 mammograms, and according to him, 25% to 30% of breast cancers that he's seen is in a semicircle line around the breast where the underwire presses.
Right there.
Yeah. Now, it sounds like sports bras would be better because they don't have the underwire, but if they're pressing your breasts and constricting them and preventing proper circulation, they're not good either.
What about corsets?
Corsets? Oh, my God.
They're bad, huh?
Oh, they're really bad, yeah. I mean, they've been killing women for a long time. The corset was broken down into the girdle and the bra, but they're all body shapers. Any body shaper is not good for the reason that when you apply to shape your body, you got to apply pressure. And when you apply pressure, you cut down on circulation. So you don't want to change the shape of the body, of the breasts or any part of your body. When you do, you will affect your circulation, and everything is about circulation. And, you know, it's also connected to the pollution in our world. When we get these toxins in our diet, all the contaminants, all the petrochemical pollution, the plastics, all of this that, you know, the pesticides, herbicides, hormones that, you know, all these things that we take in our food and air and water that's polluted, it goes through our whole body and it has to flush out. And the lymphatics are responsible for that. So if you constrict part of your body, like the breast with a tight bra, you concentrate those toxins in the breast. It can't get out. It's delivered by the bloodstream under pressure, and it gets into the breast tissue, but it can't be properly flushed out by the lymphatics, whose job is to flush out stuff like that. If you constrict them with the bra, they just won't do the job properly. So it's a combination of the bra impairing the breast cleansing mechanism and all the bad stuff we take into our bodies that need to be cleansed out. So it's really about circulation. That's why some people can live in a polluted city and they live to an old age. And you wonder, how can these people survive? I mean, you know, well, there's probably a lot of genetics in that too, in that.
That helps.
Yeah, that does help. But, you know, you can survive in a toxic environment if you have proper circulation and let your body heal. But once you start constricting any part of your body, whether it's tight belts, those are bad. Tight neckties cut off circulation from the head. Actually,
I hate ties.
Neckties? Yeah.
I hate them.
Yeah.
They're just too constricting. They choke you. Let's go to Betty in North Carolina, first-time caller. Betty, go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are we?
I'm fine, Betty.
I wanted to make a comment. He had stated earlier that doctors nowadays just prescribe whatever instead of trying to find out what is wrong with you.
Mm-hmm.
I totally agree with him. I have had tinnitus for at least 2 years now, and when I first went to my doctor and said I had tinnitus, instead of him saying to me, oh, let's try to figure out why, he just said, I'll take some Allegra D, which I did for about 3 months, and it didn't help. But my thought process is your body is designed to take care of itself for the most part. So when you have something like tinnitus or whatever, it's your body telling you something isn't right.
Mm-hmm.
So
well,
for
your tinnitus, you might want to try considering how you're sleeping and elevate your bed and make sure you're not leaning on the ear that's giving you that problem. Because you got to try to think, what am I doing to my ear? Am I pushing a phone into it all the time? Am I wearing, you know, a Bluetooth in that ear? Am I leaning on it when I'm sleeping all night, compressing it, which cuts down on circulation and increases pressure? You know, you have to, like, be your own little detective and ask yourself what you might be doing. And then stop doing it as an experiment and see if you feel better. Give it some time and see if you feel better.
Let's go to John in New Mexico, west of the Rockies. Go ahead, John.
Oh, hi. I just wanted to ask Dr. Singer about wearing a hernia truss for most of the day.
All right. Well, if somebody has to wear something like that, Doc, what do you think?
Well, how tight is it? How does it feel when you're wearing it?
I would guess tight.
Yeah. Well, you know, you can guess what my answer is going to be. I mean, nothing tight.
That seems to be the denominator here.
Nothing tight.
Nothing tight. That's a great slogan, by the way. Nothing to Doc, as we wrap things up here, I want you to get out your website again for people and your books.
Yes. Well, the website for the bra and breast cancer issue is brasandbreastcancer.org. And on that website, you can see Dress to Kill, the new edition, which you can buy in Amazon or any bookstore. And you'll also see when you go to Amazon, I have other books on like Head Elevation with the Get It Up. That's a very important book, and you can experiment with your sleep position. And I wrote a whole bunch of other books, but right now I think the most revolutionary thing that we're doing is Dress to Kill. And I encourage you to see the new research and, you know, share the experience of 25 years of, you know, fighting this battle to get women the information that they need to make healthy choices for themselves.
Super. Thanks again for being on the program, Sydney. Really appreciate it. Cindy Ross Singer, and his main book is called Dress to Kill. We are dear friends with Neil Diamond's agent, Rob Light, and we're going to try to get Neil on the program. The big story tonight, as I had at the top of the hour, Neil Diamond is retiring from touring after he says he has been diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. He's days shy of his 77th birthday, which will be on Wednesday. He's canceled his tour dates in Australia and New Zealand, and all of them for here on. His hits, of course, Sweet Caroline, America, Love on the Rocks, and Hello Again, and so many more. He will get a Lifetime Achievement Award at Sunday's Grammy Awards.
Where it began, I can't begin to knowing, but then I know it's growing strong. Wasn't the spring, and spring became the summer. Who'd have believed you'd come along? And touching hands, reaching out, touching me, touching you. The night, and it don't seem so lonely. We fill it up with only two. And when I hurt, hurting runs off my shoulders. How can I hurt when holding you? Touching warm, reaching out, touching me, touching you.
Neil Diamond giving it quits from touring. He said he still writes and he'll do some songs maybe in studio. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.